the Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to this very special spoiler podcast dedicated to Duncan Jones' Warcraft, The Beginning. Now, as we did with Matthew Fallon for Kingsman: The Secret Service and Christopher McQuarrie for Mission Impossible: Rogue Nation, we're deviating from spoiler special tradition somewhat with this edition. There won't be a segment where Team Empire discusses the movie. Instead, this is purely and simply an interview special in which Ardan Jolin, one of our resident Warcraft experts, many thousands of hours of game time logged, discusses the ins and outs of the video game adaptation with the movie's director, Duncan Jones. Again, thousands of hours of game time logged. However, we do cling to tradition in one area. This is not an interview for people who haven't seen the film. This will discuss all the ins and outs of the movie, all the third act revelations. So if you haven't seen Warcraft: The Beginning and you do want to hear this stuff, hightail it to your nearest cinema, watch the movie, and then come back here. But also, don't be put off if you don't know the game that well. If you don't know your Azeroth from your Elberoth, there's plenty here for you to enjoy. And so you should do that right now. Here's Dan Jolin talking to Duncan Jones. Enjoy.
Duncan Jones, director, co-writer and orc wrangler for Warcraft: The Beginning. Welcome to the Empire podcast. And
thank you.
A very special podcast, of course, because we're going to be getting into all the nitty-gritty details of
Fantastic.
Warcraft
yes,
itself.
Yes, thank you.
So, I mean, just to start with, I mean, this podcast marks the end of a very long process for you. You came on board in 2013. I mean, you shot the film in 2014. We met on set briefly in April 2014, I think it was, in Black Rock Valley. I mean, why did it take so damn long?
It's a massive project. And, you know, the guys at Blizzard and Legendary and everyone who's been working on it have been trying to make it for, I believe, nearly 10 years. And I think trying to get it right for Blizzard and for everyone involved, it really took some time to get that right. And as you mentioned, I got involved about 3.5 years ago. And as a fan of the old games and as someone who really wanted to try and do it right and work with Blizzard, you know, we were able to finally put it together and get some traction. But the 3.5 years that I was on it was really, that's longer than I've ever spent on a movie or hope to ever spend on one movie. But there was just so much to do. I mean, we had to take something which have this amazing aesthetic that works in the games and completely translate it all into a live action environment. And then there's all the technology involved, the set builds. It's just a massive, massive endeavor.
Mm. I mean, as someone who played the game yourself, you played World of Warcraft.
I played the old games.
And you played the old
Warcraft.
Game.
Okay, yeah. They started 20 years ago. So I was playing those back when they came out.
Okay. So from that perspective, what elements did you feel you had to get into this film?
Well, the thing that you have all seen.
Yeah, yes. if you haven't, stop listening.
Yeah. In previous fantasy films, so sort of in, you know, a lot of the time, you get the good guys who are the humans or the sort of the more cute creatures, and then the monsters are the bad guys. And that sort of has been the standard. And Blizzard have always done this fun thing of taking tropes that we're used to and, you know, just putting a little bit of a spin on them. Mm. And what they did in Warcraft and in World of Warcraft is that the heroes come from both sides, and you really get a sense that from their own perspective, they see themselves as doing the right thing or being heroic.
Yeah.
And that's what to me, that was absolutely essential to making a Warcraft movie feel, you know, like it was genuinely about Warcraft and not just fantasy wrapped up in their aesthetic.
Mm-hmm. I think for people who have played the game, for fans of the game, I mean, I think they're going to be blown away by some of the stuff in this. I mean, especially you know, the presentation of the orcs.
Yeah.
The way they look, the way they move, you know, that's to see them brought to life through those performances is astonishing.
I think both the orcs and also the environments, you know, a lot of the places that are in the film are very recognizable to people who play the game. And I just wanted to sort of give them a sense when they watched the movie that they had gone home. They'd gone somewhere where they really felt that they recognized. And if they could control the camera and maybe pan left or right, they'd actually know what it is that they would see if they had that kind of control. So it really is that sort of playing to their nostalgia. But on the other side, trying to make a fantasy film for those people who don't know anything about Warcraft, that you know, it's just a big, fun ride.
Yeah, yeah. Which I have to ask, You know when the Universal logo comes up at the beginning?
Yes.
Was there ever a discussion about changing the landmass?
100%, okay. Yeah. Okay. I tried to do it. They wouldn't do it.
And they let Kevin Costner flood it for Waterworld. I mean, come on.
For whatever reason, it was something I would have loved to have done. We, you know, way back when I had suggested it and we were kind of waiting on the answer and didn't know. And then I started seeing people online talking about it, saying, hey, it would be really cool. And I was like, yeah, it would be really cool. I wish it would happen. But unfortunately not.
Okay. I mean, so there's lots of little elements in the film that people that play the game will recognize. I mean, so we passed a summoning stone at one point. I saw a summoning stone. Although in Elwyn.
In Elwyn Forest.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, where's the dungeon in Elwyn?
Maybe it's to come.
And the Murloc by the river, a kind of...
Murloc by the river, and then Khadgar when he casts, expels the fell from Medivh at the end of the movie, there's a level up magic that happens around him.
I didn't spot that. Okay,
that's for the next sound effect.
Amazing. Actually, there is. I've got a Khadgar question for you. And
flight path from Stormwind to.
Oh yes, of course. Yeah. No. The question. So Khadgar's in Medivh's library, right?
Yeah.
And he's looking in a book, and I saw in the book there was an obvious illustration of a plant. Was it Khadgar's whisker?
I don't even know about that. I would have to check that. But okay. I will tell you is that that scene, obviously, when you go through the editing process, there's a lot of trimming down that goes on. Mm. There were a couple of extra shots and things that we did for the library set. And we did manage to get, it didn't make the cut, but there was a copy of the Book of the Dead from Evil Dead 2
Amazing.
In there. Unfortunately, it didn't get the camera time I was hoping to give it.
Right. Okay. So whereabouts can we look for it then?
Or, you won't be able to. The shot's not in there, unfortunately.
Damn. No, I mean there are many. I mean, it's outside of the nods to the gamers.
Sure.
I mean, I thought there was lots of lovely grace notes in the film. So just little character moments, which I think really add life to these big epic films.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And there was this one moment where Lothar, Travis Fimmel, puts his hand out to Benjnetzer, who's Khadgar, to help him up.
Yeah.
And he just takes his hand away and walks off. And
I got but fun.
Yeah, I got a lot of laughs in this screening I was in.
Yeah.
But where did that come from? And is that Travis bringing that? Was that a moment that happened?
Travis and I agreed early on that, we wanted to try and bring a lightness of touch to the whole film, so that it was kind of a good balance of melodrama, which is a plenty of.
Yeah.
And also, kind of fun moments, because Warcraft again is, if you go to the game, it's replete with these big sort of operatic, sort of dramatic storytelling, and then lots of goofiness going on as well. Mm. Whether it's, this sort of strange devices and things, or there's just turning characters into sheep. There's all sorts of humor in the game, and we just thought, you've got to reflect that if it wants to feel real to that original universe.
Yeah. Now, I also like the fact that Travis spent, I think, the last half hour of the film in bare feet.
And that is a very odd, but I was made informed that Travis liked to be barefoot, and I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. I wonder if there's a way we can make that work. So he has this fight with a giant sort of clay golem, and gets his boots stuck in its back. So the boots come off, and then from that point on, he's kind of barefoot, which kind of was fun when we started doing the sort of Sergio Leone inspired final duel with Blackhand, and we could do these nice, these fun sort of over the foot shots, looking at the at who he's facing off against.
Yeah, kind of part Sergio Leone, part Coen brothers, isn't it? Because they always have the camera going along behind the feet and everything, but. Yeah. Now that really struck me. I don't have a weird foot thing or anything, but I just thought I've not seen that before. Like the main heroes just running around barefoot.
Yeah.
I wondered if that came from him because he spends quite a lot of Vikings without anything.
He does.
On his feet.
He does like to. He does like to act shoeless.
And you mentioned the polymorph moment as well, which obviously was a big fun moment. But, again, I was looking at, maybe it's just because of the stories of people that played stormtroopers in The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Was there someone behind that guard, the one with the little head shake? Was that like you behind the mask?
It was a great local actor that we worked with up in Vancouver. But it was trying to fit all of those things in there, the nice call outs to the fans of Warcraft. But again, try and find a way to make it so that the humor lands for both audiences, those who do know about it and who don't.
Hmm. So there is a point in the film where there's a surprise cameo.
Yes.
All the research I've done on it and all the stuff I've written about it sort of over the years, I had no idea. I wasn't expecting this. So Glenn Close pops up. So, I mean, firstly, how did that come together? But I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about the character she's playing and their significance, because I'm not familiar with that character from the lore of Warcraft.
Yeah. I mean, the deeper you go into the lore, the more of a rabbit hole you sort of find yourself in. But there is this character, Aladai, who is written about as the first guardian. And sort of in far back in the story, in the storytelling of Warcraft. So we kind of, you know, working with Blizzard, we've kind of riffed on that idea. Originally that character was male. But we decided, you know, it would be nice to sort of have it as this strong female character. I'd had a chance, you know, to put cameos in Moon and in Source Code. You know, I had Kevin Spacey in Moon. I had Scott Bakula in Source Code. And this was another chance to work with someone that I really admired and you know, thought, oh, well, God, wouldn't it be amazing to work with Glenn Close, who has such a strong presence anyway. I thought there would be just a moment where you kind of feel the gravity of that character.
It's funny because when she first appears, you just see the mouth, and I instantly went, "Oh, that's Glenn Close."
Isn't that amazing?
You can absolutely tell. She was game then. She was like, "How long did she come in for?"
She was in for half a day. I mean, it was a fast bit of work. It was kind of a separate shoot from everyone else. So we just had Ben Schnetzer and her there and herself there. But it was it worked out really easy.
Oh, cool. I mean, and talking about strong female characters, obviously, Paula Patton is Garona, who is the pivotal character of this entire story.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole story is about this group of characters, this race of culture of orcs who find themselves, whose planet is basically falling apart and dying, and they have to find a new place to live. And they leave their world through this magic portal and find themselves in Azeroth, which is the world that we sort of spend most of our time in the movie. And there is already a culture that exists there that's mainly humans, but also elves and dwarves. And that's kind of where the conflict arises.
So she is explicitly half human, because I know in our, like, in discussions previous to the film, that's how she was talked about. But it's funny, in the film, there's kind of the non-orc side of things isn't explored that deeply.
Again, when you get into the edit, things get taken out, which is understandable as far as everyone trying to make sure that there is a certain amount of pace to the movie. There was a little bit more coherence to who she was and where she fit in in earlier cuts. She is, in the lore itself, there's even a contradiction about whether she's half orc, half human, or half orc, half Draenei, which is this different race that we see at the beginning of the movie. We play her as half orc, half human, and our backstory to that, I wonder if we should really be talking about it or not, because it's not in the movie now.
Okay.
But there is a good and logical reason why she is half human, even though these two cultures are separate at the start of the movie.
Okay.
And it made sense, and I thought worked really well, but we trimmed it out.
Well, what I drew from it was there's that dialogue between her and Medivh and Foster.
Yeah.
And I thought, hang on, is he saying that he's like her father? You know, from this, because he mentions, you know, previous interactions, and you know, I thought, so did he get it on with a lady orc?
Somebody brought the orcs across from Draenor, from their planet, Draenor.
Because we obviously, this isn't the first contact.
No, a lot of fans say, how is it possible that she's half human? The humans have never had any interaction with the orcs. Well, one of them has.
So is that deliberately ambiguous then? Is that something you're kind of leaving
there? It's more ambiguous than I wanted it to be. I would have liked it to have been, and it was more explicit.
Well,
maybe if we ever get the chance of an extended edition, that will be back in there.
Interesting. So we'll do a Peter Jackson with it, I guess, or a 4-hour long version. And then she has that, and because it's great. I love these interviews because I can actually talk about what happens at the end. So, of course, you know, there's that very significant moment in the battle where she has to make the decision to kill
King
Lane.
Yeah.
And, again, to sort of to place that character in that situation, I mean, that's pretty much, I mean, you know, is it fair to describe her as the main character of the film? Do you,
I think,
do you see
so. I mean,
it that
I think,
way?
And I think it, you know, there is something operatic about it. There is kind of, I think, and in keeping with the kind of big grand storytelling that, that Blizzard and Warcraft is known for, I like the fact that we've kind of had this, you know, very dramatic, I think, arc for her of someone who didn't fit in with one group of, you know, one culture, found herself with a group of, with humans who she felt she could fit in with, and then that situation sort of rends her from away from them. And she's kind of stuck in the middle and finds herself having to side with the orcs again, who kind of offer her an opportunity to be part of them again, now that she's done something from their perspective so heroic. And then obviously any kind of very tentative relationship she might have been building with Lothar is now in a very different, you know, position, because Lothar thinks that she turned traitor.
Yeah, yeah. And I like the kind of the little repeated gag about the knife as well. There wasn't a repeated gag, but the knife was significant.
Yeah, absolutely. It started as a gag and then pays off.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned, actually, you talk about being very oppressive and everything. One of the things about the experience of the game, is the music.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it, to me, there's no way it wasn't a conscious decision for you to not use the game music for the film. But I just wondered why you came to that decision to not actually use the same thing.
You know, we worked very close. I mean, I worked very close with Ramin, who did the score for the film, to bring it into line with the kind of I think the presence and the scale of music from the game, which again, speaking of opera, from the game, it certainly is, with the big choruses and everything. We you know, Ramin was amazing and incredibly flexible and willing to bring in elements of the game music that he sort of rescored and brought in. So when we see Stormwind, we sort of hear a little bit of the Stormwind music and doing that. I think that there was kind of a general sense that you know, from the studio and from the producers, that they wanted to make sure that the movie was its own thing. So as opposed to feeling too directly tied to the game by using its music. I think, you know, I think it was a calculated move on their part, but I'm glad that if we were going to go that route, that Ramin was there to I think make it work as well as it could be done.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the guy who did the Game of Thrones theme, right?
So
it's good.
Absolutely.
And the pieces
of music I think he did are fantastic in their own right. But I certainly appreciate, as a fan myself and loving the music from the game, that for those who don't hear it, or hear as much of it, because there is some of it, that might feel like a missed opportunity. But I love the work that Ramin did.
And another major, major thing in the film, obviously, this is for fans of the game, but for the story and the you know, the possible continuation of it, is the birth of Thrall.
Yeah.
Although he's never named as such in the film, because why would they call their baby Thrall?
Yeah.
Do you know Thrall's real name? Was it ever in the script? Has anyone ever told you the name he was supposed to have?
Absolutely. Gosh, now my mind's blanking. Please forgive me.
That's all right.
I mean, in the film, we you know, Durotan names him, and that I believe is a pre-existing name. So I think that is in the lore.
Okay.
So Thrall and that character is absolutely kind of, if we're fortunate enough that people are loving this movie and want more, he will become a very important character in whatever we do next.
Yeah. Yeah, I think just for the benefit of anyone listening who doesn't know the game, so Thrall grows up to become the leader of the orcs and the entire horde, in fact, you know, every race. And he's like a major hero in the game.
And Orgrim's future and Thrall's are kind of become tied together a little bit.
So, I mean, obviously his story, his background within the game is a fantastic, it's like a Spartacus story, basically.
Yeah, absolutely, it is. And that's what
slave,
I would love to do. Film number two, if we got to do The Chance, would very much be Thrall's emancipation.
Yeah.
And Orgrim, who is very much kind of the backup to Durotan, and who's sort of learning from Durotan, will become, you know, have more of a teaching role in with Thrall.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be great. I mean, I loved what you did with his birth as well.
Yeah.
You know, actually, and also, again, that in itself, another little nod to the game, having the critter.
Yeah.
Come along, you know, this deer just come along and stand there in front of them. It's just like, okay, yeah, deserves to die. But the idea that, I don't know, just the idea of Gul'dan drawing life from something from Azeroth.
Yeah. Yeah.
To give to Thrall, or, you know, his birth name, or the baby. And then, of course, that turns him green. Which,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is one of those elements where if you go directly by the lore of the game, we have had to come up with solutions that allow the audience to understand, okay, how does this magic work? What is it? Why is this kid green when his parents aren't? And, you know, it's all of these things. So we came up with a solution that I think was very elegant, but may not be directly the same as what's in the game lore.
Yeah. Because, of course, you've got the orange orcs.
Yes,
which is the natural state, the natural colouring for orcs, I believe, and then the green ones who have been affected by fell magic directly, and that turns them green.
Yes, so are we talking about the movie or the game at this point?
we're talking about the game, but I think that's what I took from the movie as well.
Yeah, I mean, we tried to be a little bit ambiguous with the green. I mean, again, there were scenes before where we kind of. That we would have had in the film, where you would sort of get more of a sense of why they're green. But I think it makes it, you know, I think we got the shorthand in there. Green is bad.
Yep.
But green makes you strong.
Right.
So I think the fact is the kid, you know, this little baby who's sort of barely able to survive is reinvigorated by taking the power from this little animal and putting it into him, and that's what turns him green. And I think that's enough for the audience to sort of get, okay, I understand what it is. And then later, when Gul'dan has his meeting with Orgrim, as they look over the orc camp, and Gul'dan offers to give him the fell, we kind of get a sense that, okay, that's a bad thing. He doesn't want that.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yeah.
But I love that. That's sort of encapsulated there in Thrall. You've got part, you know, his home world, part Azeroth, you know, and then part Fel, part, you know, shamanic natural origins. It's all...
Goel. Sorry, just came to me. Goel. The little baby's name is Goel.
Oh, right. Okay. There we go. Thrall's real name. Fantastic. Of course, there's lots of elements that you couldn't get into this. And we have talked about it, you know, for the Empire feature. And you obviously, for you, it was a filtering process so the story could make sense. But... you know, you've got to admit that the death of Lothar's son wouldn't have had quite the same impact if a priest had walked along and cast a resurrection spell.
Or if you just saw his ghost running back to it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. but yeah, I mean, you know, I'm wondering, if there are obviously future Warcraft films, you know, then healing magic, holy magic.
Well, magic itself is a massive opportunity, I think, for how the world of Azeroth will change. You know, in our film, magic is fairly rare in that Medivh is able to cast magic, Khadgar cast magic, and then on the orc side, Gul'dan cast magic. But it's pretty exclusive to them. And the idea of enchanted armor or weaponry, which is powered by magic or has some added benefit because of magic, that doesn't really exist in our film, at this part in our storyline.
Yeah.
What I would love is that if we got the chance to do another film, that the Kirin Tor, who are the kind of mages who live in this floating abode, would literally bring magic back down to the people. And it would kind of all of a sudden spread sort of the availability of magic, and that kind of just sets everything a little bit crazy as well.
Yeah, I got the impression that Khadgar would be instrumental in that kind of a dynamic, like he would democratize magic, if you like.
Absolutely.
Because he's the outsider from the Kirin Tor.
Completely, and the idea of enchanting weaponry and armor would also become kind of part of our story, because, you know, there's again going back to lore, on the orc side, the whole idea of armor and the big sort of famous chunky armor that is worn in the game would sort of be orcs interpreting what they have experienced having fought the humans.
Right.
So it's kind of, now that we've kind of set up the two factions, now we can kind of move orcs on to a step where they themselves have their own, you know, armor and have these, you know, powered up weapons.
Yeah. I mean, it was great to see some of the other races popping up. So we saw some dwarves.
Yeah.
We saw... now, I want to get this right, okay? High elves?
High elves, yes. High elves. Yeah.
I'm going to get it right, because they haven't become blood elves
That's
yet.
That's correct, not yet.
And there definitely weren't any night elves.
That's correct,
good,
not yet.
Good, because I thought, was that a night elf?
No, just high elves.
And then the scene ended, and I couldn't quite, you know... So, okay.
This is very nerdy kind of
honestly,
Warcraft lore.
This is totally nerdy,
work.
But, you
Which
know...
Is, well, the thing is...
This is why they got me in the room to do this.
This is stuff that we understand and appreciate, and obviously, hopefully, a chunk of our audience will. But... For those who know nothing about this, this is going to float right over your head, and that's totally fine, because the movie is not about that. It's all just information and dressing that's there for the fans who do know about it. For everyone else, it's just a really cool fantasy film.
But it's like in Star Wars.
Yeah.
When's the original one, The New Hope?
Yeah.
There's all these aliens in the canteen.
Yeah.
You don't know what race they are.
No.
You don't know where they're from, but they're cool to see. I mean, it's like... You know, the Murloc moment. So the Murloc's the little fish, the fishy guy in the foreground
in
underneath the bridge.
Yeah.
He makes the sort of noise, which I can't do. But that, again, felt like, you know, then you get those moments in Star Wars where the funny creature's in the foreground.
Yeah.
And it's just a transitional scene.
Yeah.
You've got this nice little detail. So it felt like you were doing that for the broader audience.
Yeah.
But, you know, personally, again, going back to being the nerd.
Sure, yeah.
I want to see trolls and I want to see taurens. You know, I kind of, you know.
Well, taurens I absolutely want to see. And again, if we get the chance to do another one, taurens would come up, especially in this Spartacus story that we're talking about. You know, I think again, on a lore level, and there's so many restrictions, which I'm comfortable to, you know, to allow to be part of the, you know, of the weight of making a movie like this. I have to work within the restrictions, but. If I can be clever to find a way to get out of the restrictions or to make them work for me, then I'll do that and I'll pitch it to Blizzard and hopefully they'll kind of see the benefits of doing it. So a Tauren would not actually fit story-wise in the next movie unless I could get a Tauren into the same situation as Thrall as far as them both being prisoners.
Yeah.
So I think I can get my Tauren in there.
Yeah, in that gladiatorial environment, it would make sense to have a Tauren because they look really cool and
they look cool,
and
they're massive, and if they had been captured somewhere, somehow, or been lost at sea, or whatever the explanation is for this Tauren being where he shouldn't be, it would still work within the timeline.
Cool. Taurens, by the way, are minotaurs.
Yes, they're minotaurs. Basically, it's just
like
minotaurs.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, the undead can't factor in because that part of the story's not happened yet. But anyway, I mean, you know, you get zombie films and whatever. You get undead running around in enough other movies. We don't need them. We don't need them here. Okay, well, okay, so you're done with Warcraft.
Yeah.
And how does it feel then to be getting back into, you know, some, you know, Mute, to be getting into something
of
your own?
It's kind of a relief. I mean, you know, I've enjoyed the process. It's been a phenomenal challenge to try and make it work. I think the fact that I now get to go back to something independent and something that is such a passion project that I've been trying to make for such a long time.
Yeah.
I get to work with Paul Rudd and Alexander Skarsgård and other people that I haven't mentioned yet. or maybe they have been by now, I don't know. But you know, these are it's a great cast and it's just going to be so much fun to be working where the focus is not about how to solve other people's problems, but about how to deliver the thing that I want to deliver.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we're really looking forward to that.
Thank you.
And, I mean, you know, I'm looking forward to, seeing Thrall and those Taurens fighting
that would
in
be
that
great.
Arena
that would
in,
be terrific.
In, what, 4 years' time?
Five, oh, God,
six
no.
years, seven,
hopefully,
eight.
Hopefully it doesn't take that long.
Okay. Well, Duncan Jones, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye.
And that's it for our Warcraft Spoiler Special. Hope you enjoyed that interview with Duncan Jones. There's plenty more Empire Podcast goodness coming your way. The regular pod, the Mothership pod, is up every Friday afternoon. We'd love it if you would subscribe to that. And if you do like the pod, or if you love the pod, please give us great reviews. 5-star reviews on iTunes. We love those things. Can't get enough of them. So that would be awesome if you could do that. We also have a podcast dedicated to a discussion of a feature in the magazine, the 50 Greatest Sci-Fi Moments of All Time. It's a very entertaining and illuminating conversation there. So check that special out as well if you would like. And of course, keep an eye peeled for all the spoiler specials that are going to be coming your way this summer. We've already had Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, and yes, that does mean that March is being counted this summer. We had Captain America Civil War, we had X-Men Apocalypse, we got Warcraft the Beginning, and coming up in the list we have Star Trek Beyond, Jason Bourne, Ghostbusters, and many, many more. So keep an eye out for that. Thanks for listening. I've been Chris Hewitt. Goodbye.